Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Kasarni deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Irreplaceable by Beyonce. A little dual purpose there in honor of her winning in the big Grammy last night, or one of them. And in honor of the Dallas Mavericks, who put everything Luka Doncic owned in a box to the left and sent him out the door.
What'd you think of Beyonce's big win, Album of the Year?
I honestly, even though I dipped into that for the song, I didn't think that much of it. It's weird to me that we've evolved to a point where people take the Grammy seriously, because that is not the world I grew up in. I mean, the 80s and 90s, people didn't take the Grammys seriously. People like rolled their eyes at the Grammys. The idea that it was supposed to, that it wasn't some accurate reflection of what was good or what mattered, just never occurred to me or anyone I knew. But now, like, you know, it's a different generation. They take these awards a little bit more seriously. And so I think the album's okay. I think she's made like four or five better albums than that. I like the singles. I thought the album was a little overthought a little bit. And so, you know, I don't love that album, but I like Beyonce.
Okay. Where were you and how did you hear about the trade? And did you think it was a hoax?
I was literally laying in bed reading. And I decided, okay, I'm going to go to bed now. And so I picked up my phone just to look and see, because the volume is always off my phone at all times. So I picked it up just to see if I'd missed any calls or texts or, you know, notifications or anything like that before I went to sleep. And 2 minutes before that, the Shams tweet had gone out, like literally right then. So no one had come on to that moment that I picked up my phone. No one had come on to co-sign it. And so my first thought was, oh man, Shams got hacked. I think that was everyone's first thought. My second thought, after a couple other people came out and said, no, this is true, I said, oh, man, the whole NBA internet got hacked. It's an elaborate hoax that China or whoever is really like they've infiltrated the whole system. Like, oh, what has Elon Musk done now? It was one of those kind of things. And then, like, once it became real, like, the, you know, your thoughts continue and maybe continue on still.
Yes. All right. So what are your thoughts on the deal?
Well, after I got past the Shams got hacked and it's an elaborate hoax, my third thought, my initial instinct was it was like, you know, a bigger, quieter version of the De'Aaron Fox situation, where did Luka go to them and say, okay, you got me under contract for a year and a half, but I'm not going to sign the new deal with you and I'm only going to the Lakers. You might as well deal me now. That was my assumption. Like
That they knew that they weren't going to be able to get him to sign the extension. Right, exactly. Right.
And reporting suggests that has not been the case, and I tend to believe that mostly because it's a $50 million difference. He can't get the Supermax with the Lakers. So yeah. I don't think Luka came to them and said, send me to the Lakers specifically, and that it came entirely out of that. Like, I don't believe that, but I still have some questions about, like, what is really going on here. And there have been some mixed messages, and so to me, there's two sort of general explanations, and maybe it's a little bit of both, or maybe it's all one or the other, and the other is smokescreen. Is it Dallas just – maybe things were much worse behind the scenes than we knew, and Dallas deciding on their own, we do not want to make a, you know, six-year or whatever commitment going forward for however hundreds of millions of dollars to Luka Doncic, and there are issues greater than we see, and they want to be out of the Luka business. That seems like what's happening. But there was also a quote in one of the things from Nico Harrison saying, you know, we knew we were headed towards a tumultuous summer and other teams were going to be trying to get Luka. So did they want Luka? Did they not want Luka, or did they think they couldn't have Luka? It's a little unclear going forward.
Yeah. So when I read that quote, and you're right, it's like, yeah, other teams are loading up, and he also threw in the Supermax. The way I read that quote, and again, light will be shed on this, we will learn more, was I think what it means is if we weren't going to offer him the Supermax, and we weren't, Because we have misgivings. There were other teams that were coming. Like, we were hiding for a tumultuous offseason. I think those things fit because we don't really believe in Luka. And so, therefore, he might end up walking.
Of course, no one else could offer him the Supermax either.
No.
But to your point, yeah, it could be, there's some of both there. But there's definitely, either way, there seems to be an element of, like, they just decided they're more down on Luka than the rest of the NBA is, like the team that has him. And are they right about that? Or are they wrong about that? Only time will tell. I mean, they were just in the NBA finals if this dude is their best player and he's 25 years old. And, like, I don't know, man. It would take a lot for me to want to be off of that.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's not the way they're talking about him or the way they not it sort of suggests he's like Trae Young or something. You right. know, well, he puts up numbers, but he's not. He just took his team to the finals. So it's kind of astonishing. And then, of course, the other part that a lot of this is enraging if you root against the Lakers,
right.
Because not only do they get Luka, they get him at a discount. Because they can't offer him the Supermax, and so they'll have more money to work with to put money around him. But then they also, it's like, how the hell did you end up keeping your first-round pick? And that's because they didn't open the bidding to other teams. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, once you get past the first thing of, like, you decide to trade Luka Doncic, once you get past that, there's the question of, like, you know, who he's traded to, the exclusion of other possibilities, and then once you get past that is what are you getting from that team? That's where I wonder if, you know, the idea of where Luka will re-sign and where he won't plays into the deals that will or won't happen. That tends to be the case with trades of this magnitude, but if right. Luka truly had no idea this was coming, then that I don't know how that could factor into it, right? It's not a Jimmy Butler situation where it's all played out in public and, like, he's telling people, don't trade for me because I won't resign there. If Luka didn't know this was coming, how would anyone know? You could guess, but you wouldn't know that you couldn't resign Luka. So there's that aspect to it. And then, and maybe that drives down value. It feels like Dallas, like, targeted Anthony Davis specifically. Like, A, we want to win right now, and we want to... who is a player that will pair with Kyrie Irving to win right now? I mean, Anthony Davis is still, like, you know, maybe a top 10 player in the world right now. So it's hard to necessarily see you would get a better individual player, and maybe that's what they focused on. But for the Lakers can tell themselves, like, they get a shot down, like, who knows? But this is really about the next star. It's like we're transitioning from we're the Lakers, we always have a star, so this is the next one, right? And maybe the ships will cross in the night for a season or two with LeBron and Luka, but it's really about the post-LeBron thing. And given that that's what it's about, that you don't get Austin Reeves, and you don't get you don't get Dalton Connect, and you don't get their second first-round pick they could have traded. You don't get any of that. I think once you get past the first two humps of, like, we're trading Luka Doncic and we're trading him to the Lakers, at least get a better deal from the Lakers.
Yes, at least get a better deal from the Lakers. We were contemplating how this could work out for Dallas. And I really think the only way it really doesn't look, if in 5 to 10 years you don't look ridiculous.
You got to root against Luka.
Well, no, you have to be better than the Lakers over the next 5 years, right? You literally have to accomplish more. You have to, and they might accomplish more, certainly right. This year. They're probably better positioned to do it. We'll talk about. I think probably both teams are worse right now in terms of this year.
I think it's more than that, though. I think if Luka is great and the Lakers just fail to build a team around him, unless you're, like, winning titles or going to the finals, you could still look at that and say, yeah, but we'd be better if we kept Luka. You know, I don't. So it's not a matter.
No, I think you have to go to the finals, and I think you have to win titles. You just went to the finals with Luka.
Right.
You have to do better. You know, or at least go back to the finals, and you have to hope that the Lakers aren't winning two titles or something while you're.
Yeah, it's that or the Luka thing blows up. And it becomes like Joel Embiid, and, like, he never plays, and it's a sunk cost, and, like, no one wants that except for Nico Harrison, maybe. But, if it becomes that, then you're saying, we dodged a bullet or whatever. But, like, I don't think that's likely, you know?
No, you wonder, though, is that if you look at – it seems crazy. You look at Philadelphia, you look at Kawhi, you look at
right.
Embiid, you look at Zion, and you think, I don't want to be saddled with a big contract, a massive contract with a guy who doesn't play. Is that fear of that somehow motivating?
Yeah, I think it was. That's what to the best we can perceive truth from all of what's come out, that seems to be the main thing, is that the level of investment versus the level of risk, and the level of investment is transparent. We all know what that is, but that they perceive a level of risk that was greater than the outside world perceived. And they may be right or wrong about that perception, but that's what seems to be partly this. And maybe ownership, wants salary going down. I don't know.
Yeah. What's the level of investment risk with Ja Morant?
Well, Ja's already under contract.
Yeah, he's under contract. So yeah, so it's done. It's done.
Right. Is it? And it's he's on a max, but he's on what Brian Windhorst labeled the fun max or whatever, which is like, you know, it's the lower percentage, right? And so now with the cap going up, I don't, you know, like Ja's contract is what it is, but like no one looks at that contract and says, oh, you know, oh no.
What a disaster. Yeah. Right. No. So in terms of right now, Grizzlies looking around, we'll get to San Antonio as part of this as well. The rosters, neither one of the rosters particularly makes sense. Either the Dallas is too big heavy, and the Lakers were already looking for a big, and then they traded away Anthony Davis.
Well, my friend Matt Hurdle on his Patreon made the good point. And maybe if you're thinking long term is the reason you don't do this, you're looking at relative value of assets. But in terms of like making these teams make sense right now, like why wasn't there an Austin Reeves, Daniel Gafford, you know, swap, right?
right.
Like that would have balanced both teams out a little bit.
So they're both, from the Grizzlies' perspective, I think they're both less daunting this year. Yes?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think in terms of this season, I think both of those teams look like they've probably taken a little bit of a step back. But, like, those teams had elite talent before the trade, and they swapped elite talent, so both teams still have elite talent. And see, they are both still teams that if you get them in a playoff series and they're healthy, you're worried about it. Because, like, you're still talking about playing, you know, LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis, Kyrie Irving, just in different pairings. Right. But it's still those guys who I think you'd be worried about to see them in a playoff series.
Yeah, I think that's right. So it is funny. When you're watching these trades from the outside, what I want is the team that's getting the star to have to pay through the nose.
Yep.
And that didn't happen in Los Angeles.
Nope.
And it also didn't happen in San Antonio, where they didn't have to give up any of their good young players around Wemby. And they had to give up three firsts. One isn't really going to be a first. It's going to be 2 seconds, Charlotte's first this year. A really good deal, it strikes me, for San Antonio, obviously. And that one's Zach LaVine. Sacramento makes the decision that they want to continue to be mediocre, and so they get Zach LaVine. What did you make of all of that?
It really starts with that, and you can blame it on an ownership situation. You can blame it on just like a, you know, a franchise, you know, reality situation. I don't know. Like when you're a franchise that was bad for a long, long time, and then you get pretty good, it's really hard to like. But you top out at only pretty good. I get that it's hard to pull the plug and start all over again, you know, and go get back to the wilderness again. But they are consigning themselves to maybe not even being a play-in team. You know, I mean, you know, like their upside is now like 8th or 9th or 10th, you know, and it may not even be that. And to just downgrade from De'Aaron Fox to Zach LaVine and not get much else for it, to me, is a really depressing situation for Sacramento. To your point, I mean, the Spurs kept, you know, Stephon Castle, they kept Devin Vassell, they kept Jeremy, they kept everybody, basically, of note,
yep,
on their roster. And, like, I'm not an expert on, like, all of the draft picks owned by San Antonio, because that would take, like, half a day to figure
they
all that
out.
They
still have a bunch.
But it seemed
they
like, not only do they still have a bunch, it seemed like they didn't give up the better ones. And so,
I think that's
it was a great deal for San Antonio.
All right, so, what does this mean for the rest of this week? You know, what trade deadline is looming, and who knows what it means for the Grizzlies as well. But does this mean there's going to be even more activity as these teams try to balance out their rosters and figure out go ahead.
Yeah, so it seems like part of the reason why the Luka deal, maybe both deals, but really the Luka deal happened when it did, is to leave more time between now and the deadline to pursue other stuff. And so, yeah, I think, I mean, all four of those teams could still be active between now and the deadline, but it's certainly in particular I don't know about the Kings, man, but it certainly seems like San Antonio has got all the ammo in the world if they're trying to win now and they didn't give up much. They have all this other stuff they can still give up. They could still be shopping. I sort of wonder if San Antonio would go after Cameron Johnson, who we've been talking about. They need shooting around De'Aaron Fox and Wimby, right. And it seems like that'd be an easy thing for them to pull off right now. Like, you could send them, you know, Harrison Barnes' contract, you know, which is probably a better just contract filler than Marcus Smart, and, like, you got better draft picks, and, like, to me, you could just snap your fingers and go just pick up Cameron Johnson for that team. I'm making that up. I haven't read that anywhere. But I think the Spurs certainly could still be shopping. I think the Lakers will be. The problem with the Lakers is that I don't think they're going to move that 2031 draft pick, so I don't know what they have to shop with at this point, but they would certainly like to add a center. I mean, I think you're going to see them send, like, whatever small things they have for Jonas or something like that. It's probably what they'll do. And Dallas, I don't know. I mean, Dallas's team is kind of balanced. It just doesn't have Luka on it. So I don't know. But then the other thing is, like, you know.
Do they come off a big, though? I mean, they're going to be playing P.J. Washington at small forward. They're going to be playing Anthony
Derek
Davis
Lively's
power forward.
Derek Lively's hurt.
That's
yeah,
right.
And so
that's
they're not quite Lively's, as deep, yeah, deep right. there as they are right. on paper in reality. But the other thing is, like, you know, before the De'Aaron Fox thing materialized as the thing likely to happen, before the Luka thing just keeps streaking out of the sky, like, everyone was focused on the Jimmy Butler thing, and, like, that's still out there. Now he's, like, apparently saying, don't trade for me Golden State because I won't. He's saying, don't trade for me Memphis because you won't give me an extension. And he's saying, don't trade for me Golden State because I won't sign an extension with you. Like, is it just like Phoenix or bust? It may just be bust, you know? I don't know what's going on.
Well, it's just
going
to be bust.
Yeah.
It is funny. You still read, like, I don't know, there was a piece today about that mentioned the Grizzlies in connection with him. Maybe in The Athletic. I don't remember. It said they've never really put together an offer for him, which good to your point. Why would you until you get the predicates sorted out? Why right. would you put together an offer for him?
Right.
So there, that is yet to happen. Oh, and by the way, then the Grizzlies won in impressive fashion.
Yeah, they've been playing basketball
night.
Too. Yeah.
They've also been playing basketball. Jaren sensational again. I've urged people to read Drew's series, which drops on Jason today, and I mean on Jaren today, and I think highlights his growth. It's just kind of nice that to see him blossoming simultaneously as a basketball. Like, this is when he's blowing up as a basketball player. Plus, he does all this other stuff. It's fun to watch. And last night leads the Grizzlies past the Bucks, which they seem to own the Bucks in Milwaukee last night. What did you think of that?
Yeah, Jaren Jackson, world's most interesting man. Move over Dos Equis guy. that was a great game. They played two really great games in a row. I mean, they had two wins against good teams, Houston and then at Milwaukee. Wins that were up for grabs in the fourth quarter and where you got really gritty performances in the fourth quarter, like really spirited, especially that game last night. They were just going all out. It was like sort of a thrilling in terms of just playing on the edge and playing with intensity to pull a game out. Like that's like when basketball is at its best, and you really got that in the second half of that game. Jaren in particular, but like Scottie Pippen, who's been a little up and down, I just was fabulous.
Unbelievable.
Fabulous off the bench.
Santi was great in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. All kinds of guys. Everybody stepping up. Everybody playing well. Like a really good, one of the better wins of the season, I think, last night.
We did have the injuries. I don't think we've heard yet, but tonight you got Spurs in town. Ja missed that one, and now Desmond Bane had to leave that one with an ankle. Maybe it's a Yuki night.
We have not gotten an injury report for tonight, I don't think, unless I missed it. I'm looking at my notifications. I'm not seeing it. We haven't really got an update on the Bane thing because he left the game. He did not go straight to the locker room. He hung around on the bench. And with the Ja thing, I mean, it's a back-to-back. So if you're day-to-day with shoulder soreness, you're probably not playing both halves of the back-to-back. And so him missing the Milwaukee game doesn't really tell you much. You know, I think whether he's at on the injury list for this game is what is going to tell you something.
And then what have you thought of Gigi? And Zach Edey had got a double-double last night. That was nice to see. He wasn't a part of the heroic fourth.
Right.
But what did you make of those two?
There's, you know, Gigi had maybe the most exciting play of the game with the block on Giannis. Gigi is someone who's showing flashes of his ability, but he's not really playing well for the most part. Neither of those things should be particularly surprising. He's very, very talented. He's also very, very raw. And there is there's a gap between the day-to-day reality, I'm talking about on the basketball court, the play-to-play reality, maybe is a better way to say it. There's a difference between sort of the play-to-play reality of Gigi Jackson in NBA basketball right now and the level of expectation I think a segment of the fan base has for him right now. There's a real gap between those two things. I think the Grizzlies have always been patient on this, and they're trying to bring it along. Like, they're giving him minutes, even though he has not been particularly good. And I think that's fine. I think it's going to be a process with Gigi, and I think everyone should be patient about that process. But he is not, for the most part, helping them right now. And as far as Edie, he's been better lately. He had that dip, and now I think he's been better. You watch Edie, you can see, and maybe this is hope, but I think chances are he's going to get a lot better in the future, even though he was a 4-year guy. He's still there's stuff he's tipping in. You want to see him dunking, right? There are rebounds he's tipping out. You want to see him just grab. And so, you want to see him play with more force. He's a rookie. He's a rookie who's making a bigger adjustment in terms of style of play and use than like most rookies do. And so I think his sheer size and his ability makes him a guy who can help you in your rotation. But he's not going to – my hope is that you see a pretty big jump forward from him next season. I think what he's done lately is, it's been pretty good, but it's probably a guy in a lot of games that you get into the tight fourth quarter or whatever, you're playing Brandon Clark.
Chris, thanks very much. Should be a wild week. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. You can read his stuff at the Daily Memphian. There is breaking NFL news that we'll talk about when we get back, and other matters. Just no end of things to talk about. First, though, let me tell you that if you're selling your house in 2025, call Josh Heisa and his team at Keller Williams Realty. Listen. Any real estate agent can stick a sign in your yard, but that's not, it could just stay there and stay there and stay there and stay there and stay there. What you need is a winning marketing strategy, and that's what Josh Heisa has. Honestly, hear him right on this radio show, but he brings that same aggressiveness to selling your house. It's why if you go over and look at the reviews, you just see more than 300 five-star Google reviews. That's not me talking. That is customers who have worked with Josh Heisa, home sellers who have worked with Josh Heisa. I'll make an instant cash offer at full market value for your home. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. No reason not to call Josh Heisa if you're thinking about selling your house. The phone number, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Thanks to Chris Harrington for joining us. I want to reiterate a really interesting series by Drew Hiller of the Daily Memphian, writing about Jaren Jackson Jr. and all that he's doing off the court. The most interesting man in the NBA. And it's just great to see a guy who came here, worked hard, has been, he was kind of a goofy kid when he came here. And now he is a dominant NBA player, appropriately two-time All-Star, and continues to expand what he does off the court as well. Just really impressive growth on all fronts from Jaren Jackson Jr. So Jeffrey, while we were talking NBA, I know nothing's going to compare to the Luka trade, but Myles Garrett has now requested a trade. It was just last week that the Browns said, no. Myles Garrett is not on the market, and he just put himself on the market. What did you make of that?
I kind of felt like long time coming, right? Like even with the Browns saying, no, we're not making him available, I always just kind of felt like that was posturing because in the end, They have bigger roster problems, and I just felt like if you're Myles Garrett, at a certain point, like how many big years do you have left? I got to imagine he probably wanted out.
One of the truly amazing things is that I think you can trace this moment. Is he the most dominant defensive player in the league right now?
I mean, it kind of depends on how do you view him versus TJ Watt. I'm trying to think who else would probably be up there.
Over the last 2 years, second league-wide in pass rush win rate to Parsons, despite being doubled 30% of the time.
I feel like he's the scariest player.
Ranks first in both incompletions and interceptions created through pressure, and first in forced fumbles. The dude is a monster, right?
I mean, I just know this, like, when you, in terms of, and I don't know how much this is just how physically imposing he is, I just feel like he's the scariest player in the NFL on defense.
There are reports that the Browns are sticking to their, they don't have to trade him, you know, they are sticking to their position and will not entertain trade requests. But this moment, what I was going to say was, this moment, I think, yet again, can be traced back to the Deshaun Watson fiasco.
Sure.
I mean, in the end, you gave up the firsts, you gave up this ridiculous contract, and you condemned your franchise to this period of being absolutely dysfunctional and putrid, which is why Myles Garrett wants out. When you towed up what Deshaun Watson cost this franchise, I think you have to add Myles Garrett to the list, or at least a happy Myles Garrett. Maybe they'll end up keeping him. But this moment is brought to you by Deshaun. Do you not agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. Because, I mean, even last year when they had Flacco and they were still winning at a decent level, like, it's not like Myles Garrett was demanding out. But, like, in the end, it's the complete despair that the trade has caused, which is leading him to want out.
So, did they trade Baker? Did Stefanski and trade Baker? Who was the quarterback before Deshaun?
Baker. Baker also was hurt. I can't remember if they cut him or I'm looking it up.
Could you imagine you just stick with Baker?
Yeah. But I mean, that was kind of the other thing. It was like Stefanski, it was almost like that front office. The front office and Stefanski were kind of like, we got to scapegoat Baker because otherwise the heat comes on us. And then they scapegoat Baker and then they make the Deshaun deal.
It is kind of amazing.
He was traded for a conditional fifth.
He was traded for a conditional fifth the summer that they got Deshaun?
Correct. July 6th. So, yes.
And they got that offseason, they got Deshaun.
Yes.
Oh, what a. I mean, you look at, for example, what the Mavs are doing, and who knows how it's going to work out for them. But sometimes you hear from coaches, front office, whatever, that we know better because we're in practices or because we see or whatever else. Franchises do stupid things all the time, right? They do stupid. And some of it's a product of ownership. Who knows if a cheap ownership or something in Dallas, obviously this is not Mark Cuban. Who knows what role ownership played in that decision? And who knows what role Jimmy Haslam played in the Deshaun decision. It's not really just exclusively on the GMs, it's on owners too. But what a disastrous situation. And now what you see is literally every fan base across America is saying, starting with me and the Bills, go get Myles Garrett. Like, he is exactly what the Bills need, but then again, he's what any team needs. He's what the Commanders
need.
Game
record
defensive. He's what the Lions need. He's what. It was funny. I finally brought myself to listen to the season-ending pressers from Bills Land, right?
Yeah.
And one of the constant themes was, particularly the questions from the media, were, "Don't you need a scheme wrecker on defense?" And the answer is, sure, of course we do.
Who does?
Where do you get one of those? You don't just get to raise your hand. Oh, we forgot. Wouldn't you be better if you had Chris Jones? Yes, of course you'd be better if you had a Chris Jones. Where exactly do you go get a Chris Jones or a Myles Garrett? Like, it's everyone needs one. They're not easy to find, and they don't tend to become available. Now, Chris Jones was a second round pick. Like, that was Chris Jones was a second round pick from Mississippi State. And so that was a great, great pick by the Chiefs. Myles Garrett, you had to be drafting high to get Myles Garrett. And was he one? Was he two?
Yeah, he went 1-1.
Where was he? He was certainly top five.
He went 1-1.
Probably top two.
He did go number one.
He went number one. Yeah, so you got to be drafting number one to get Myles Garrett. Anyway, everyone's going to want Myles Garrett. And now here we have discussion. We'll have those discussions throughout the offseason. Also in the NFL, NFL combination, NFL University of Memphis, really nice game and really nice week. Seth Hennigan at the Senior Bowl, including this, and we're going to play it for the folks, this game-winning touchdown.
Last shot as the American team makes their move. Hennigan on the move. Looking.
Yes.
Got it. Jack Besh has his mobile moment.
So Seth Hennigan throws the walk-off touchdown pass to lift. What was he? North? South? What was he?
I think they were the American, weren't they?
And the American
national,
team.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So that's
his
Jack
team, his Besh. Guys. Over the other guys, they focused on Jack Besh because that was a very sweet story. Jack Besh's brother, Tiger, was killed in the attack in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Tragic story.
Played
at Princeton. And then was working in finance and happened to be in New Orleans and in the way of this madman murderer. And so he was killed in that accident. And so Jack Besh's brother catches the winning touchdown pass. Had a bunch of other catches as well, actually. Had a nice game and was MVP. But Seth Hennigan, who was a late invite to the Senior Bowl, ended up throwing more passes. Listen, they were in a position they had to move down the field to get the score to tie. So threw 14 passes. Completed 12 of them. His first throw, honestly, was a beautiful, beautiful pass that could have been caught. He threw a really nice back shoulder pass down the field. He also threw a double pass, Jeffrey, that ended up as a touchdown. 12 of 14, 132 yards, walk-off touchdown. Both Ole Miss fans and Memphis fans should be pretty happy, I think, about how their quarterbacks did at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, you're hearing, did Jackson move up to the third quarterback? I have my questions of what is...
You hear first round. You hear literally Jackson Dart could be a first rounder now.
Correct. So, I mean, my question is, what does third quarterback mean? I know this. I feel a lot better about Jackson Dart and Seth Hennigan than I do Jalen Milroe right now.
If you draft Jalen Milroe, don't you just let him cook and hope, like, whatever, like, people see tools and they're like, you know, maybe we can do this with him? I don't know. I want nothing to do with
him. My problem with Milroe is I think he could be a coach killer.
Yeah, you want nothing to do with Milroe. I just want nothing to do with Milroe. I want a quarterback who can throw it to the right guy.
On time.
At the right time, with accuracy. I say that even though Josh Allen was a wild man when he was drafted. I didn't like that pick either at the time. But anyway, so it's interesting. Will Seth get drafted? It's also bizarre. There's this bizarre, like, you root for your quarterback, right? Like, you rooted for Paxton, even though he didn't make it in the NFL. I think people were proud that he was drafted in the first round. I rooted for all of them. And yet with Seth, it will be weird if he goes on to have success in the NFL. Will it look like a reproach for Memphis football? Like, it's like with all the others, you can say, all right, well, they were great. They won at Memphis, and now they've gone on and they're winning.
Right. It's not like these guys have won at Memphis or, like, you know, gone 9-3 and then gone on to be, you know, all pro NFL guys. Like, for the most part, most of their best success was at Memphis.
No, but if Brady White had, he didn't. But if he had been a successful NFL player, you wouldn't have said,
No, you would have said, look,
why didn't he do that in Memphis?
He was a winner in college. You could see it then. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you say, like, oh, he was a winner in college. You could see it then. Like, yeah.
And if Paxton had gone on to have an NFL career, you wouldn't have said, why didn't Justin Fuente unlock him, take advantage of him, whatever else? Weirdly enough, and again, he won a lot of games, Seth did, but he never got to a championship game. And so if he has, and I hope he does. I saw lots of Memphis fans who were really pleased with him and happy for him. Why wouldn't you be? Like, the guy ultimate loyalty, sticking with the program. He's wearing his Memphis Tiger on the helmet, throwing that touchdown pass. But it is weird in a certain, and I'm sure Ryan's rooting for him too, right? I'm sure he is, even though Ryan is aware that it's going to cause people to say, well, why the hell didn't you win at Memphis?
You couldn't even win with him? Really?
Yeah, couldn't he? No, yeah, really?
We're a long way away from that, to be clear. And I do also think part of the Seth story right now is there's not a lot of quarterbacks in this draft.
No, and not only that, I saw a story over the weekend wondering whether the top two quarterbacks in this draft are going to fall. Like, if in the end,
sure,
I know they're always pushed high. Quarterbacks are always pushed high, right? But if in the end you don't have conviction about the quarterback, you are, when you get on the quarterback train, you tend to be stuck with them for a few years, right? Now, we've seen circumstances where they haven't. Aikman and Steve Walsh in Dallas, like you've seen where they, Arizona, obviously, you look at Josh Rosen, they moved off him immediately.
I've still got some stock if you want it, by the way.
But if you are the Titans, don't you just say, you know what? I think we'll just skip this year. We're going to get a pass rusher or a corner or a receiver, and we'll get in the quarterback business again next year when Arch is going to be available. What do you think?
I think it's entirely possible that this draft resembles the 22 draft, which is Kenny Pickett is the first quarterback taken at 20. Desmond Ridder goes third round at 74. Malik Willis went third round, 86. Matt Corral, third round, 94. Bailey Zappe, fourth round. Sam Howell, fifth round.
Here's the problem, though. I think it's different. In other words, I can see the Titans saying, you know what? We're just going to take the best player. You know, we'll take a pass rusher. Thanks. And we'll wait. Because it's a new administration there.
Sure.
Right? And so they're like, you know what we're going to do here? We got 1 year before we have to pick our quarterback. And then we pick our quarterback. That gives us a couple years while, we got a young quarterback. We can't win now.
We got a young quarterback. Come on. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Whereas if you're the Giants, I hate to say this, but if you're Giants and you are Shane and Dable, you have to. The getting the young quarterback now and either hitting or having him look promising enough, developing that, like, that's your only way out.
Or do you try and get the, if you're Shane and Dable and you know you've got to basically win like 9 games at least this year, do you go and try and scrounge the veteran market? Do you make the deal to get Darnold? Do you, like, you know what I mean? Like, are you going to go trust the guy, the veteran guy that maybe it doesn't give you the highest ceiling, but if you're just trying to keep your job, you're not trying to max out. You know what I mean?
Someone suggested, I saw a piece over the weekend, Aaron Rodgers to the Titans as a real possibility.
A lot of people have thrown that out.
State vax deniers, like whatever. He'd feel really comfortable in Nashville, and they don't want to draft their quarterback this year. So why not Aaron Rodgers as a stopgap?
Is their offensive line a whole lot better?
No, they would have to work on the offensive line. They would have to work on the offensive line. Other news that we have to get to. My God, it's been a busy day. Other news we have to get to. Chip Kelly.
Yep.
Leaves Ohio State and is headed to the Raiders. So
he's
have
back,
lost
baby.
Both of their coordinators. And Ryan Grubb goes to Alabama. He was most recently in Seattle, and he goes to Alabama as the OC. What do you make of both of those
teams? I actually like both hires. Grubb, he's going to be the scapegoat, but if you look at what he's done with Michael Penix, like I think that was a good hire. And then I've always been in the camp that I think Chip Kelly knows what he's doing offensively. And I think with Pete Carroll, like, as long as I didn't see, like, all right, let's just go get, you know, Brian Schottenheimer to run our offense, this is a hire that...
How big a blow is it for Ohio State to lose both OC and DC?
I mean, it's a big blow, but at least you got to do it after you won a title. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. That's right. Yeah. And you're going to have
correct
awesome players. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Of course, it's Monday, so that means you will join their program today. Cerrito is going to be with us today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munn's going to join us today during the first hour. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.